Today on Maine Calling, the dizzying Democratic Senate nomination process. 2 weeks ago, Graham Plattner dropped out of the U.S. Senate race against Senator Susan Collins. 1 week ago, the news was all about the candidates vying to replace Plattner. Then a debate showcased eight of the candidates. No one was singling out a clear frontrunner. Meanwhile, the Maine Democratic Party rolled out a process for choosing a nominee. This past weekend, delegate elections took place across the state. Suddenly, things took off as each county reported almost unanimous support for Troy Jackson. I'm Cindy Hahn, and today we take a close look at how this turn of events came about. We'll talk with people who participated in the delegate election and with those who were part of the organizing force that propelled Jackson to the top. Behind the curtains of the nomination process, what does democracy in action look like? Maine Calling is coming right up.
Support for Maine Calling comes from Rennie's, a Maine shopping adventure throughout Maine. Now open in Bangor, Waterville, and Augusta. And by Maine Seacoast Mission, delivering health care, education, and support to islands and coastal downeast communities. Learn more at seacoastmission.org.
This is Maine Calling. I'm Cindy Hahn. It has been warp speed on the political front in Maine. Today, we take a moment to stop and examine what has transpired and why. How did Troy Jackson so suddenly and decisively become the presumptive Democratic nominee for U.S. Senate? Is this democracy in action? Joining me to dissect this situation, Rachel Ohm is reporter for the Portland Press Herald covering government and politics, and Michael Shepard is political editor for the Bangor Daily News. Thanks both of you for joining us. We invite you to join the conversation. What have you found interesting or surprising about the Senate race? Were you involved with any of the delegate caucuses over the weekend? Send an email to talk@mainepublic.org, post a comment on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. Mike, I'm going to start with you. You've been pretty busy, so has Rachel. Maine political scene has been just making national headlines since Graham Plattner was in the race. But it's only been 2 weeks, unbelievably, since he dropped out of the race, and we've had basically new developments pretty much every day since. So you get the job of giving us a summary of what's transpired up to where we are today.
Yeah, it's a crazy thing that 3 weeks ago, Graham Plattner was the Democratic Senate nominee in Maine. And then we had a political report detailing a rape allegation from an ex-girlfriend. It took a few days. He was warring with the party a little bit. He withdrew. That set off something Maine hadn't seen before. As instead of the party picking a replacement, they built a nominating process from scratch in about 10 days. So they came up with this sort of county caucus and convention model. So after Plattner dropped out, and really in the days while he was considering dropping out, Democrats started to get in, most notably Troy Jackson there right at the beginning. A dozen plus filed to run at some point. They had to gather signatures. They had to work these county caucuses across all 16 counties last weekend. 3,700 Mainers signed up to be delegates, just 500 spots available. So some counties voted in person, some virtual. Troy Jackson's campaign ran by far the tightest operation of anyone in the field, getting people out to vote for their delegates and making sure that they had people running for delegates in every spot. So by Saturday, he was, I think by my count, 11 ballot delegates away from locking up a majority of those going to the 600-person convention. By the first caucus on Sunday, it was confirmed his rivals dropped out, including Shana Bellows and Nirav Shah. And you know, here we are this week, right, where delegates are heading to Bangor for a convention that will make it official. Technically, nothing's final until that happens, but it's pretty much a done deal at this point.
Well, that was a very good summary. Thanks for that. And Rachel, I'll just turn to you. I mean, I know as journalists, we're all watching this and kind of like, whoa, I can't keep up. What stands out for you in this series of events as being significant?
I think Mike got all the highlights, but I will say for me, I mean, it stands out that this is such a unique and crazy process, and it has just been a whirlwind to like cover it the last 2 weeks. I mean, it was There were a lot of controversies tracking Graham Plattner for the last couple of months, so I wouldn't say it's totally unforeseen that at some point he eventually, there was something that forced him to drop out. It still came as somewhat of a surprise, and I think since then, I was also surprised last weekend at how quickly Troy was able to coalesce that support. Like, I did kind of think this was going to be more of a drawn out process, more of like a nail biter when we get to the convention. But now it seems like the convention this weekend is going to be a little less exciting. So it's just been really interesting to follow. Like, I am looking forward to Saturday still because I think this has just been such a unique, interesting moment in Maine politics.
And it still has to have that closure of going through the whole process. Yeah. But as both of you said, so Mike, the caucuses, the delegate elections were sort of the pivotal thing that all of a sudden flipped everything and sped everything up so quickly. So, this is where the actual sweep by Troy Jackson happened, county by county. There were a lot of wannabe delegates who did show up, hoping to get elected and thinking they'd go to the convention and decide, who they wanted. But it all came down to these slates, these list of delegates that supported particular candidates. And Troy Jackson's camp was the only one who really was on top of this key step. So can you talk about that? That, I mean, again, we were surprised. Once it started happening, what did you think?
Yeah, it was pretty easy to tell. So I think on Thursday evening, Troy Jackson's campaign had a slate out. Certainly by Friday, we were able to analyze that a little bit. And these are 500 people who Troy Jackson was telling supporters that they should go to the caucuses and just vote for it. Vote for these people and nobody else. They didn't want to dilute their support at all. And by Saturday, we had slates as well from Nirav Shah and Shena Bellows, but kind of immediately, and eventually we got one from Jordan Wood as well, a former second district candidate who was also in the race. And I started to notice issues with these slates, the other slates, pretty early. Shena Bellows and Nirav Shah had 65 of the same people, 65 of the same 500-ish people on their slates. When we got Jordan Wood's slate, he had about 150 people whose names overlapped with Shena Bellows or Nirav Shah's slate. So it was clear early on that Jackson had kind of the tightest slate with very little overlap, which meant that it looked like he would have much more loyal support. So we started seeing results come in on Saturday. He was dominating, and everyone else seemed a little bit confused. And I think that you can rightfully criticize just about any nominating process, particularly one spun up in such a short amount of time. But this was the process. Everyone had the rules. Everyone kind of knew that campaigns were going to stack both the audiences and the delegate pools. And I think there were some sort of rank and file Democrats who may not have been completely up on that by the time they got there. But certainly, I don't think the campaigns can have too much to complain about there. They had plenty of time to sort of understand this process.
Well, we have the right person on the line now to talk about that and how that actually happened. Joining us is BJ McAllister, who's president of Frame Strategies and senior advisor to Troy Jackson during the nomination process. Thanks for giving us a call, BJ.
Thank you for having me. Great to be here.
So, as you've heard us talking about already, that many people were caught by surprise at how overnight Troy Jackson just went from being one of the candidates to, the Senate nominee that, at least presumptively, who just swept the election process with the delegates. When something like that happens, it automatically does raise questions. Was there something behind the scenes? Was there maneuvering? And did the National Party machine just throw its weight into the race? And was it fair? So, what's your explanation of how this got pulled off?
Well, I will tell you what was behind the scenes was a tremendous amount of grassroots energy that I've never seen the likes of in my 15 years of politics. We had so much outreach from the moment that Troy was even considering getting the race. There was a grassroots effort to draft Troy to run, and it gained over 1,000 signatures in the first day it was up. And that quickly laid the groundwork for the grassroots enthusiasm we saw going through the process, going into the caucuses, and that we're continuing to see as we head into the convention this weekend.
Okay. And then if anyone goes to your website to learn more about what does Frame Strategies do, it shows that you do work with Troy Jackson's campaign. It shows that you also work with the Maine Democratic Party, and they're the organization that planned out the nomination process. So if your agency represents both, was that just an advantage to give Troy Jackson's campaign a head start in knowing how to use this nomination system to his advantage?
It's a great question. We've worked with the Democratic Party before, but, you know, certainly was not engaged on this process. And I think the Democratic Party deserves a lot of credit for what they did. You know, they stood up a primary process, essentially, or the closest thing they could do by having voting in all 16 counties for registered Democrats. And they were very transparent with every campaign. They had regular phone calls. They talked to the campaigns about what the process would look like as it was being built. And I think really the challenge here for all the campaigns was who could, you know, identify the strongest coalition of support and mobilize them quickly. And, you know, that's exactly what we did. You know, obviously we had, you know, 500 delegates running who had said that they would support Troy if elected. But we had over 1,000 people tell us that they were willing to run as a delegate to support Troy. And that was just the kind of energy we were seeing out on the ground, because people were hungry for the progressive message that he was running with.
So how much is that, would you say, attributable to just Graham Plattner's base was there and ready, and they were all in on Troy Jackson? Is that how that strength of numbers came through?
Well, I think if you look at who Troy Jackson is and his legacy in Maine, you know, he has been carrying the progressive messaging far before, you know, Graham Plattner ran for office. And I think people recognize that he's a proven elected official who can deliver results on the progressive issues that Mainers are really hungry for in this moment.
All right. Well, so if he does get the nomination on Saturday, which is expected, what is the plan right out of the gate then?
We are ready to bring this message to, you know, voters across the state. I think there are still people who haven't met Troy yet, and we're excited to introduce him to people, because what we've learned time and time again is that when people meet the working class champion from Allegash, they tend to like him. And so our task is to make sure that more people learn about Troy, learn what he stands for, and eventually votes for him in November.
Well, thanks for sharing your insights. That was BJ McAllister. He's with Frame Strategies, and he's Troy Jackson's senior advisor during this nomination process. Great to have you on the show. Mike, I'll turn back to you because, you know, we here on Maine Calling, we hear from listeners whenever there's news like this, and there's a representative, you know, bunch of questions we hear. And this email from Michael crystallizes what I think a lot of people are still thinking. He said, if the delegate election through campaign slates effectively determines the outcome before the convention begins, what independent purpose is the convention intended to serve? And I know it's almost like a not answerable question, but he's raising that same point that you hear people saying, okay, so now if it's already kind of predetermined, you know, is this really what democracy is supposed to look like?
Yeah, and that's a better question for the Maine Dems. I'm just a reporter here, and so is Rachel. But I think that, look, the Maine Democrats had a goal here, and I think there was a lot of sensitivity in the base about making it look like any one person, Chuck Schumer, Janet Mills, anybody was putting their finger on the scale and essentially selecting the nominee. So this convention was not intended to be 600 people going and figuring it out. They layered on this element of democracy, which is people going to these county caucuses and showing up for a candidate. And the campaigns had time to work that process. And it's the same as you would see in a presidential caucuses, like a presidential caucus, like in Iowa, we used to do them here in Maine. Kind of the question, right? You know, it assumes that the goal from the beginning was to make sure that everyone was independent going into this convention, and that's just not how the process was designed. Maybe you think it should have been designed like that. I think you can certainly make that argument, but it's just not how it was designed, and you have to expect the campaigns to do the rational thing that they need to do to win the election. So I think everyone behaved here in a pretty expected way.
Let's back up. Go ahead, Rachel. Go ahead.
Yeah, no, I would just say I feel like, yeah, the process is the process. And like I didn't anticipate things lining up so quickly for Troy Jackson, but I think like Mike said, like the campaigns are within their rights to play the process and try to take advantage of it in whatever way they think fits them. And I guess that's what happened, but we still have to go through the formalities of like what was laid out in terms of this is the process.
Sure. I just wanted to back up for a second with you, Rachel, to talk about some of the other candidates who were in the running up until Sunday. It seemed like some of them did have substantial support among Maine voters, especially Nirav Shah, Shana Bellows, Jordan Wood. Just back us up just to talk about that a little bit. At the point that Thursday's New Center Maine debate happened, it seemed like Maine people were generally considering all of those candidates, or at least curious or interested in those, even the four that were in the second hour of the debate as well. So what was your take just from your reporting on how viable those candidates were?
Yeah, I mean, I think several of them. I mean, there at one point there were like more than a dozen people that had thrown their names out there to run for this Senate seat. But I think the front runners were always some of the candidates that we had seen from other primary races. So Shana Bellows, Nirav Shah, and Troy Jackson had all run in the governor's race, and I would say they were kind of being looked at as like the front runners for the Senate seat. Jordan Wood had run in the congressional race in the second district. He also threw he well he was in the Senate race first, dropped out, went to the House race. He finished third in the House race and then got back in the Senate race. So I think the four of them were kind of, I mean, you saw them in the first half of that new center debate last week, and I think they were kind of all looked at as the front runners. But I think Jackson, like we've already talked about, kind of was most aligned with Graham Plattner. They had campaigned a little bit together when Jackson was running for governor. Bernie Sanders had endorsed both of them. So I think some of the similarities between Jackson and Plattner became more apparent, like as the process went on.
Okay, I'm going to go to a caller now. Michael is calling in from Stanford. Hi, Michael, go ahead.
Hi. Yeah, this is Michael from Stanford. And I think the greatest failure of this process is not necessarily its outcome, but the voices it failed to include along the way. And I know that there's been conversation prior to me calling in, talking about how the campaigns may or may not have, had their slates voted for. But, there was more than 1,500, no, like 150,000 Democrats and unenrolled voters who participated in the primary in June. But the delegate process ultimately rewarded campaign organized slates and candidate loyalty more than broad community representation, which meant that fewer independent voices and less political, geographic, and demographic diversity was in the room. And finally, just like even if the convention reached the same result, in which I think it would have ultimately, I think Troy would have earned the nomination on Saturday. So that's not what I'm talking about. I just think that Maine missed an opportunity to create a genuinely representative, deliberative process, not a criticism again of the delegates or the nominee, just a question of whether the law should do a better job of keeping voters at the center when a nomination becomes vacant. Thank you.
Thanks for your question, Michael. I do think there are a lot of people thinking along those lines or asking those questions. Mike, again, I know this isn't for you to determine what does happen, but what are you hearing along those lines?
I think this is really tricky because we think of primaries and nominating processes as being public processes run by the state and administered by the state with the goal of maximal participation. And this is a reminder that parties ultimately, when they're forced into emergency situations, get to make their own decisions. I think there are a couple interesting points here. I think the Maine Democratic Party was trying to devise a process that they thought could sort of reach the maximum amount of people within that time. And again, I'm not here to defend their process. I think it can very easily be criticized. They could have done things in a different order, maybe, and that they could have ordered their deadlines differently, and maybe there would have been a little more blind of a selection process. But I think it would have been very difficult to spin up what the caller is describing in a matter of about 3 weeks. So you have to caucuses like the Iowa caucuses take years to plan for these parties that have been doing this for generations. So, but it's a really difficult of event to plan. And I think that my response when I've been talking to people about this who have sort of differing opinions on it, is just like, what would you have done? And that's not a Starkey answer. I'm genuinely curious when someone tells me that. Okay, well, what would you have done? I think it's always a difficult question for Democrats to answer. They were in a horrible position, let's face it.
Yeah, difficult all around. Well, thank you for that call, Michael. We do need to take a quick break. Give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. This is Maine Calling. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Cindy Hahn. We're taking a close look at how the Democratic Senate nomination process has unfolded. My guests are Mike Shepard, he's Bangor Daily News political editor, and Rachel Ohm is Portland Press Herald's government and politics reporter. Share your comments and questions. What do you think of the nomination process? How do you feel about all the national attention to Maine politics? Email us at talk@mainepublic.org. You can comment on Facebook or Instagram, or you can give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. And joining us now is Sue Mackey Andrews. She is an elected delegate from Piscataquis County. Thanks for calling in, Sue.
Good morning, Cindy. Thank you for inviting me.
Sure. Now, you won one of the four total delegate spots for Piscataquis County. I believe you're the only one who is listed as uncommitted, and the other three stated they were for Jackson. So tell us what it was like when you showed up for the caucus and what happened from there.
Well, I have been a supporter of Shenna Bellows for years. I've known her for decades, and I admire her work and her integrity and her ethics. So I went to our local caucus with my Shenna t-shirt on, prepared to give remarks in support of Shenna, and just learned as I was actually pulling in to set up the meeting that she had dropped out, and I read her statement and understood it. But, it was a shaky moment for me because I was disappointed, but on the other hand, I understood her decisions because I have to say that I too was concerned. How would she protect our state's election integrity and at the same time conduct an effective campaign and win against Senator Collins? So it was hard. It was
would
hard.
Describe what it was like in the room when others heard that Shenna dropped out.
There were a lot of audible gasps because some people hadn't received or read or didn't know that she had dropped off. And it was, I was given permission at the beginning of the meeting, before the meeting actually formally started, to say a few words about her. And, you know, her decision didn't surprise me. She's always put the people of Maine first in the ACLU and as a senator and now as Secretary of State. And these last couple of years, and I don't know if people really understand how horrible they have been for Shenna and her husband. She has been doxxed and threatened and sued and was swatted and had to leave their home and have safety plans and some escalated protection. And even today, you know, she's not safe. So I hope that the people of Maine understand what she went through and her commitment to our state, and she really put our elections and us first in making this decision.
Sue, how are you feeling now about the swell of support for Troy Jackson, and what are you planning to do at the state convention on Saturday?
Well, I think that the party has been put in a terrible position. I admire that they have had to develop a plan on the fly. I know that there are many unhappy people, for a variety of reasons. But I think that basically they've done a good job. The timelines were there. They couldn't mess with those. And I think that they have tried at every turn to listen and include as many people as possible. But I expect on Saturday that there will be some unhappy folks for multiple reasons. So I'm kind of braced for that, but
okay.
I understand it.
Well, It's good that you're participating in the democratic process, and thank you so much for calling today. That was Sue Mackey Andrews. She was elected as a delegate for Piscataquis County. We have an email from Kate Barton with a somewhat similar sentiment. She had hoped to be a delegate for Androscoggin County, but didn't make the cut. And she writes, I wanted to become a delegate because honestly, I really didn't think many people would be willing to step up, and I wanted to do my part. I got involved in politics on the local level as a volunteer with the Graham Plattner campaign because I believed in the overall message. From the moment Graham dropped out, I was an immediate Troy Jackson supporter because I believed he had the best platform and experience and to win rural votes from Susan Collins. But I've also been a Jordan Wood supporter, and I really hope we've not seen the last of him or Paige Loud in Maine politics. As soon as candidates started sending slates of delegates to vote for to maximize votes, I knew I would not get the nod, but I was hopeful and willing to do whatever necessary now to guarantee Troy Jackson got the nomination. I'm excited to see how things go this weekend. This is certainly not the end of my involvement in Maine politics. So delegates with different experiences and thoughts on how that all played out. Rachel, I just wanted to ask you, just, you know, talking about this upcoming, the convention coming up on Saturday, there is another candidate still on the ballots, right? Sandra Pelletier. And is there value to having still a second person, even though the numbers don't look like she has much of a chance? But what's your comment about that, having someone still in the race as well as Troy Jackson?
Yeah, I haven't talked to her, so I don't know much about her thinking. I'm sure she could probably explain that better. But I do think there's value. I mean, I think that's the process if she wants to stay in. I mean, there's no harm, I think, in having that choice, other than maybe, you know, Democrats may not be presenting such a unified front if they're coming to the convention and there's still this choice left. I don't know much about Sandra. I think she is a native of Northern Maine, and I think she's been very involved in like women's reproductive health issues. I think she leads a pharmaceutical company along related to those lines. So, I mean, maybe at some point she could be a good candidate, but I would be very surprised if things turn out significantly divided on Saturday.
Sure. Okay, let's go to another call. This is John calling from Portland. Thanks for calling, John. What did you want to ask?
Hi. I wanted to ask, because the message that both Graham Plattner and Troy Jackson offered to the people in the Democratic Party of Maine, how much support of this platform and agenda is the Democratic core party members given to Troy Jackson? And I'm assuming Troy is going to win this nomination. And that's my question.
Okay, thanks for asking that, John. And I think we've been circling around that a little bit. Mike, do you have something to share with John?
Yeah, I'll try. I think that I've covered Troy Jackson for a long time, and I think his arc is a really interesting one. He's kind of one of a dying breed in a sense. He's only 58 years old, but he's an example of a St. John Valley Democrat who was very socially conservative in the early part of his career. You know, took anti-abortion votes, voted against gay marriage in 2009, a sense called that one of, I think, his worst vote. But he's been tracking, you know, he ran for, I covered his congressional primary back in 2014, and he was very much an insurgent candidate running then against Emily Kane and much of the party's establishment, but in recent years became the Senate president and has kind of been tracking the direction of the Democrats more broadly. So he's talking about, you know, he's talking about genocide in Gaza. He's talking about universal healthcare, which is somewhere he's always been. He's opposed to President Trump's tariffs, despite being one of the Democrats early on to back Bernie Sanders in 2016, and warn that Hillary Clinton's more permissive, you know, view of free trade agreements and stuff like that were opening up an opportunity in places like rural Maine for Donald Trump. So I think he's had a really interesting arc, and I think he has tracked to a place that has almost become more mainstream in the Democratic Party over time. So he's gone from kind of a legislative backbencher, actually got elected as an independent, and kind of come all the way up over 20 years in the legislature through the party system to put himself in position to get a nomination like this. So in terms of his support within the core Democratic Party, I think he's kind of come to embody the party, despite maybe not doing so as well earlier on in his career.
Well, thanks for calling, John. And now we have on the line Emily Bruce Plum, who participated in the delegate election for Cumberland County. She's principal of Big Picture Studio and writer of a Substack called Big Picture Thoughts. Thanks for calling, Emily.
Thanks, Cindy. Glad to be here.
Sure. So what is it that motivated you to try to become a delegate in Cumberland County?
Well, my first thought when Plattner dropped out was that I was concerned that this was another Kamala moment. And while she may have been a viable candidate, I felt like the fact that she was appointed undermined people's sense in the trust in the process and people's sense of being able to participate. So I was excited that this was a moment to do it differently. And I was really encouraged by the Democratic Party's promise of this being fair and transparent. I was pretty disheartened by the Platinum campaign, and I really felt like this was a second chance. So I was excited to lean in as a citizen and get it right.
And you wrote about this on Substack. You wrote about this experience and described how the delegate election process unfolded for you. Tell us what took you by surprise.
Yeah, I mean, I felt like the way that they set it up, the user experience of the site was so clean. They had asked for statements from everybody, and I had carefully crafted mine. You know, they had this really lovely interface where you could look people up and read about them. And so I was just encouraged. I also, you know, they had filters where you could sort on various signals about who the candidates were. So it felt very inclusive and very thoughtful. I spent a lot of time reading people's statements. I had created a little list that I of people I wanted to vote for on the ballot that I believed crossed various candidates' campaigns. So it was you know, I was like pretty optimistic, and then I realized as it unfolded how naive I was, and I really didn't see the slates. The mechanism of the slates coming. I wasn't, you know, in retrospect, I was pretty quickly unsurprised about it, just knowing like this is politics and there's a machine behind these things. But I, you know, I wrote about it in my Substack. Like I wasn't expecting it. And once I saw it, I felt a little embarrassed, honestly, like a little naive that, that it was so well put together, and I was kind of Pollyanna-ish about the whole thing.
I've heard that the word naive come up frequently in describing, you know, delegates going into this, and, you know, not in a bad way, but you mentioned the machine. Can you explain how the work you do with advising organizations about strategy and branding, that's your line of work. How does that give you perspective on how Troy Jackson's campaign was able to garner this surge of support?
Yeah, well, thanks. You know, I spent years working in sophisticated marketing departments where we would, you know, spend a lot of time building great products, thinking about it. We would do a lot to get the message put together. But it was really clear that if you didn't get your message in front of the right people in the right context at the right moment, it didn't really matter how great your product was or, you know, or anything else. Really, it was about the delivery system at the end of the day. And, you know, so it was a little bit of like a forehead to the palm to the face. Like, oh, of course, this was a move where they were going to put the slate, you know, the Jackson campaign, as I understood it, put the slate in people's text messages at the moment that they were voting. Like it was like there was no friction. It was super easy to get. It was very clean. And it was, you know, I think that for folks who are supporters of Jackson, I'm sure it was really empowering and exciting. I had honestly not decided yet. And so for me, I was like, oh, I didn't realize that this was that we were supposed to have decided by now. I was thinking we were going to go hear the messages, but then, you know, I was really aware after the fact of like, nope, it wasn't about the message or the product. It was really about how are we gonna leverage this delivery system to make sure that people could get the job done very easily. And you know, I kind of feel like kudos to them for that.
Mm-hmm. Both sides of you recognize something there. So, thank you, Emily, for sharing your experience. That was Emily Bruce Plum. She's with Big Picture Studio doing work on branding and creative strategy, and she is a writer of a Substack called Big Picture Thoughts. And we already do have to take another quick break. We are learning all about the ins and outs of the Democratic Senate nomination process in Maine. Our phone number is 800-399-3566. This is Maine Calling. We'll be right back. I'm Cindy Hahn. After Graham Plattner dropped out of the Senate race, a rapid series of events have included a debate among the new candidates, a delegate election, and the instant rise of Troy Jackson to become the presumptive nominee. Next is the state convention on Saturday. Joining me to talk about all of this are two political reporters. Rachel Ohm is with the Portland Press Herald, and Mike Shepard is with the Bangor Daily News. Share your comments and questions. Email us at talk@mainepublic.org. You can also post on Facebook or Instagram, or you can call 1-800-399-3566. There's a lot of folks calling in. I will try to get to you soon. But first, calling us now is Sarah Bigney McCabe, Organizing Director for AFL-CIO in Maine. Thanks for joining us, Sarah.
Hi, Cindy. Thanks for having me.
So as soon as those delegate numbers showed that Troy Jackson had a decisive lead over the other candidates, he did speak up and he gave credit to support from labor unions and that was really his secret sauce. So how substantial is that support?
Well, I think his support is broader than just labor and unions and goes across the whole state. But support is very deep for him within our membership, for sure. He's been somebody who's shown up for working people, for union members, time and time and time again over the past almost two decades. People feel really strongly in support of Troy, and that's why we, you know, got right to work when this opportunity arose.
Well, when you say get right to work, how did that translate in terms of the actual organizing logistics that made that happen to get this almost unanimous commitment from delegates county to county over the weekend?
Yeah, well, we have, you know, lots of folks who had come out, nearly 300 people who volunteered on his campaign when he was running in the primary for governor, a lot of other lists. And we just got on the phone and started calling people. And, you know, without missing a beat, people said, yes, absolutely. Where do you need me to show up? What do I do? And people were thrilled to have the opportunity to sign up to run to be a delegate or sign up to turn out and vote at their caucus. And so the support came really easily and people were ready and we were just ready to be mobilized because we had built so much over the past few months prior to this election.
So that's what a lot of people are saying. This is nothing more than old fashioned politics in action. That sounds like that's what you're describing. What can you tell us about national backing for Troy and how much that has contributed to his apparent claim to the Senate nomination?
I think it's just the opposite. It's actually super local support. I mean, in every county of the state, we have people who know Troy, who love Troy, and who really see themselves in the message that he is bringing forward about fighting for working people. And so actually the strength of his support is from the local level. In every corner of the state, people are thrilled to be coming out. And they also see it not just as, you know, supporting Troy, even though we love and respect him very much from what he's done for us over the years, but because we all see ourselves in the message that he's promoting, that he is standing for and fighting for. So that's where I see the strength.
Okay, well, thanks, Sarah, for calling and sharing that perspective. Sarah Bigney McCabe is the organizing director for AFL-CIO in Maine. I'm just going to try to get to people now. So Sally is calling in, and you went to the caucus in Oxford Hills. Is that right, Sally? Sally, are you there?
Yes, I am. Hold on for just a second.
Oh, yeah, it sounds like you're in the car. Okay. Tell us about your...
I was just at the first station.
Oh, okay. What was your experience in trying to become a... Okay, you know what, Sally? I'm going to give you a moment and we'll try...
I'm right here.
All right, your audio is not coming in through very well, so I'm going to put you on hold for a moment and let's see what happens if I can do that. But Rachel, I wanted to just check back with you as far as what Sarah was saying about the, you know, the support, the local support being real and deep. And is that something that's evident as kind of the real key to Troy Jackson's surge?
Yeah, I do think that tracks with what I have learned in my reporting. And I think she's right. Like, Troy does have very strong support among labor unions, but it also seems like it did go beyond that. And I do think that was helpful in this process, right? Like, having especially the labor union support, because they do have these existing networks. And then with Troy having just run for governor, it's like the pieces were all in place for those people to be calling each other and saying, what can we do now? Like, how can we mobilize like what we had started on for the governor's race and take that and like help him in the Senate race? I think we definitely saw that play out with him rallying all that support in the caucuses over the weekend.
And Mike, there's something we haven't talked about yet, that in the midst of all of this happening, there was also the other big news out of Maine, unfortunately, the shooting in Biddeford by an ICE agent. So that news dovetailed with the nomination process. How much of a role did that play in changing the dynamic of the race? It seemed to reset how people were feeling about Plattner and just turn the finger pointing right back to Senator Collins for supporting ICE.
Yeah, I think they're all the candidates agreed on that and came out in favor of abolishing ICE. I think almost literally every candidate who declared came out, and that wasn't a mainstream stance, abolishing ICE 2 or 3 years ago. So I think you're tracking here how the Democratic Party is changing and messaging these issues, and certainly the circumstances of that shooting and Senator Collins' kind of central role in a lot of the big things going on in Washington, you know, allowed them to kind of unite around that. And it was certainly part of the framing of the debate a week ago. So yeah, it certainly centered that race. I'm not sure it made any difference in the outcome, but it kind of gave this race a little bit more momentum in the public eye.
Right. Okay, let's try again with Sally calling in. How are you doing with your audio there, Sally?
Can you hear me?
Yes. Go ahead and share what your experience was like at the caucus in Oxford Hills.
That's a very interesting question. To prepare for it, I listened to the Zoom call that Steve had. I don't know what Steve's last name was, but I call him kind of a big wig in a good way. And I listened to Maine Calling. There were some people that were being interviewed. And when I went, it was all Jackson. And only three delegates got in, and I don't know, I know one was for Narasha, but two were alternates, and another one was number 17, and they weren't Jackson. How did I feel about it? I felt it was okay. It's a small town that I live in, but I felt that, first of all, I was not a Plattner person. I never have been. That's probably not popular to say, but I haven't. I never was. I was more for Niraj Shah. My feeling about it was I sat down to next to a young man who had on like a Jackson 10 or something. I said, hi, this is when the delegates got a chance to speak for a few minutes. And I said, tell me why you're for Jackson, because I'm very open to listening what people are saying. And he said, well, he's a progressive and he believes. And I said, well, I think most of the Democratic candidates are on board with what you're saying. And he said, well, he's taking dark money. And I said, okay. Then he wanted to show me the Open Secrets, you know, website. So, I mean, that was really helpful. But how did I kind of feel? I kind of felt like it wasn't that people weren't polite and nice and everything. It's just that there wasn't any room for discourse. There wasn't any room for kind of talking about the candidates we were interested in. And when people got up and spoke. There was a little clapping if you were for Narasha and Shayna Bellows or whatever, although she had gotten up by that time. But when you spoke about Jackson, it was a lot of rah-rah, standing up, clapping, shouting, you know, that kind of thing. So it's real obvious that there is, I agree, local support. However, I'm not convinced. I'm not convinced he is the right person. I will say that I didn't go see him speak. I did go see Nawaz Shah speak. Mm-hmm. My take on it was okay. Go ahead.
Okay, yeah, I just wanted to get your take on it, and we're a little tight on time, so I was just trying to get you to that point. But thank you for sharing and describing the situation there. It was good to hear about that. Mike, do you feel like, I know you were scrutinizing how the caucuses were going, and do you feel like there's quite a bit of this that was happening?
Yeah, I think that there were a lot of people, just voters just showing up who expected this to be a more open process. And look, I think Rachel and I expected it to be more of an open process too. We had a debate planned for tonight with CNN.
that we had
to cancel. So we were clearly getting ready for this to be a 2 or 3 candidate race at the very least.
I was going to ask you about that. So CNN and Bangor Daily News tonight is going to have the candidates on. What was it like for you as far as the decision process on the canceling of that?
There was just no decision to be made really at the end of the weekend. I mean, there were no candidates left, and there's nobody else who has any delegates left in the race. So,
No Jake Tapper. All right, let's go to Mike calling from Booth Bay. Hi, Mike.
Hi, how are you? Is my audio coming through okay? Because I'm in the car also.
It's not great, but let's just go with it. Go ahead.
I'll drive slower and try again. My name is Mike Smith. I divide my time between Bay and Portland. I am sure that Troy Jackson's a fine guy. I probably, under normal circumstances, would have voted for him in November. I did, in fact, vote for him in the gubernatorial primary. But I will not be voting for him in November. I will be writing in Graham Plattner, and I suspect that I'm not the only one. So the reason that I'm doing this is because I am so disgusted at the sandbagging of Plattner by the party machinery and by their junior woodchucks at DSA. It simply revolts me. It became quite clear that the Democratic Party machinery would rather lose with somebody else than win with Plattner. I think they deserve to lose, and I won't mind if they do. And I think many others are well aware of the kind of skullduggery and the, you know, gutter crawling character assassination that the machine waged against Plattner. And I think what has been underreported, if you'll just let me conclude very briefly, is the role that DSA has played in this. They are extremely effective, very capable people. You have to admire it. They're really good at the phone banking and doorbell ringing. But they're kind of in bed with the Democratic Party management, the old guard, on this one.
And Mike, your audio is not the greatest, but we got your point. So thank you so much for calling. And it is interesting about, you know, a lot of the Plattner supporters saying, you know, we're sticking with him no matter what. So we are hearing that as well. Let's try to squeeze in Frederick calling from Bath. And it's real quick, Frederick, what did you want to say?
Well, I'm looking forward to the Jackson campaign defining an overarching vision that understands that our economic system is corrupt. We just had the report that it takes a $35 an hour job to rent a 2-bedroom apartment in Maine. And that is a broken capitalism. We need a democracy to guide our economic system, which is capitalism. And free market capitalism has failed us. And I think that is the potential for a rousing rebirth of an FDR New Deal, where we actually have government money being spent on life-saving and life-giving purposes. How's that?
Thank you for sharing your thoughts, Frederick, and it's good to have you close out our show. Rachel, Mike, I'm sure you'll enjoy covering what happens next because it's all very exciting. And thank you so much for joining us. Mike Shepard is with the Bangor Daily News. He's a political editor. And Rachel Ohm is the government and politics reporter for the Portland Press Herald. Today's sound engineer was Jane Donahue. Tomorrow on the show, we will listen back to our earlier show about pedestrian safety. And on Monday, we are back to talking about the U.S. Senate race, so tune in for that. I'm Cindy Hahn, and you've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.